Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming, and thanks for welcoming me to be today's speaker. My name's Stacy. I haven't been here on Sundays for a while, so it's great to see many of you again, and many of you for the first time ever. So we'll spend some time today together in this house, in our Zen center. And I'll share with you some things I've been thinking, and also some ways that I've been thinking. And we'll do this in the context of interstitial space. An interstitial space is comes from an architectural term that describes the space that is left between walls and the space between the floor and the next ceiling. It's not only the structure or the HVAC and wires and cables that we stuff in there, but the space itself. And within this context, we'll be talking about directed attention, fantastical thinking, and non-thinking as three ways of thinking. I'd also like to experiment a little bit today. And in that, I'll give some instructions. And please participate however you would like. It's your mind. It's your time. Follow along as you want to. Does it seem agreeable? Okay. So again, interstitial space is this architectural concept, but it's not just the substrate of the building. It's not only what keeps it together. It's essential to have support beams and have walls, the structural elements of the house. But when we start to look at the space in between, we can find our own spaciousness. And we can find our own reality in this construct of the house. The beams, these beams are not structural beams. They're aesthetic, they're decorative. And yet, without this beam, the house would not exist. Without this beam, reality as we know it would not exist. Without you, without me, without everything as it is right now. Everything is as it should be. Everything is as it needs to be. The beam is not only part of the house. These beams are not holding up the house. And yet, they are the house. We are the house. And the space between the ceiling and the floor, the space between one room and another, that is the house. And one morning, now I've been in a few houses and done some meditation in a few different places, and I've sat in front of a lot of different walls. In our instructions here, we face the wall. And then one morning, after several years, I looked at the wall. And I'm not saying it was a profound experience, and I'm kind of admitting to playing around during Zazen, but I noticed I had never looked at the wall before. And so this physical reality came into view. And this directed attention, this noticing, the wall came into play. And directed attention, we often experience in some case like a seminar or math homework, something where we know we are focused. And yet, as we go around our days, we're attending to something all of the time. And we have the mental power to direct our attention. Now, a magician or a hypnotist gets in there where we haven't directed our attention, recognizes the ability to misdirect our attention, especially in activities that we take for granted. There is an infinity of time and space between picking up the cup and taking a drink of water. What's that right there? Or that? Whoa, yeah. That noise as it hits the ground. Or walking up a stair, walking up a staircase. Well, the goal is to get to the next floor. But there are infinite moments. Each step of our journey to the next flight. And we can voluntarily break our hypnosis of repetitive activity. We can voluntarily focus our thoughts and emotions. So one of the experiments I'd like to try is, call it one look, okay? And as we do this, I'm going to kind of shake up your view of the room. Kind of let it go blank. Maybe you've been in here before. Maybe you know this room. And what I'm going to ask you to do is to take a look at one thing at a time. And if you're careful with each other, you can use your fingers, your hands, but also it's fine just to use your eyes. And probably not other people in the room to direct our attention at. Let everybody else participate as they want to as well. So the exercise is to kind of randomly look at a point and work at not calling it a light switch. See how basic and intentional you can be. Not just calling it a light switch, but calling out the shadow, the shape, the color maybe, but no story about what it does or what it is. The wall, don't worry about what it's holding up. Just the first response of your view of it. Okay? So, move your gaze around and then go ahead and take one look. And again, moving your gaze, letting it float, letting it be, and take one look. Is there something you've never seen in a place you have spent so much time in? We can do this in our offices, in our workplace, in our classrooms, places you think you know, your own home, your car. one look at one thing. And now let's, with a little bit of abstraction, move your focus center to your heart, to your emotion and feeling. And again, you can move your center, your heart center around until you find it is aimed at a specific point. And then with your heart, take that one look. Do you feel it? Do you want to name that emotion? And again, with the directed attention of your heart center, let it float, and then take one look. Your will as well, we can direct our will with our voluntary mind power. So from your will center, from your legs, from your gut, notice your response as we take one look in the room. Do you feel a sense of motion? And let that focus float. And with your impulse to motion, take one look. And again, with that impulse, one look. Well, these are a few ways of knowing in our body. So go ahead and bring that directed attention to your own body. What points do you not notice in your own body? Do you skip over in the process of your day? Feel the breath coming into the space of your body. And where that breath moves, send your one look. Thanks. It's in these processes that we can fully examine our life, bring our mind power and our direct attention to our life, to become intimate with our activity, with our experience, with our expression. Let that go a little bit, and we'll talk about fantastical thinking. So, in directed attention, we can find a point of concentration. Think of one of those points that you found in the room you spent 3 hours with, the amount of concentration and what you could notice about that one little piece. That one little piece that is all of reality. Now, fantastical thinking is the creative intelligence. It's when we start to call it a light switch, right? It's the story of something, a metaphor, and we especially experience it in dream or daydream symbolism. spacing out. So we're gonna examine spacing out. And often we find ourselves in fantastical thinking when we're not manifesting the thoughts that we fear, that we're not willing to put our direct attention on. And they come around in this fantastical thinking. It's things that we think are impossible or shameful. How much fantasy time and effort is spent on sex in a society where we find sex shameful? What are the things that we can't express? When we look at our fantastical thinking, what we're often fantasizing about, it might point to fears that we haven't recognized. And same with dream, daydream, right? Or night dream. What are those fears? 3 days before my ordination, I woke up in the middle of the night screaming. And you can do a quick analysis of my psyche if you'd like, but this used to happen a lot when I was a kid, right? And however, the difference between a child waking up screaming in a house in the woods is different than a woman waking up screaming in an apartment in an urban area, right? It's a little more embarrassing, a little more concerning, I guess. And so through that day, I remembered this, what was I dreaming? What happened? And, what was it that I was fearing? And I was embarrassed about fearing. And I started to remember the dream of this person, this disheveled person, passing them on the street, tattered, worn. And then there was some other dream stuff. But later in the dream, this person, this entity, side-blinded me, rushed at me, and that's when I screamed. And I had to think for quite a while about what was this entity coming at me. And eventually in the mornings, one of the chants that we say is, we vow to turn the Dharma wheel unceasingly, to free the world from every tragedy of war, epidemic, natural disaster, and starvation. And when I heard that chant again, I knew, that's what that person was. All of those things. And here I was vowing to become a teacher, to be ordained, and say, I will take this on. And that helped me recognize that fear that I wasn't willing to attend to for ego needs of convincing myself I can do this. But that fantastical thinking made me have to face it, have to give my attention to it. And I appreciate that. So let's come back to the house. The house. We'll experiment a little bit with fantastical thinking. And you might like to close your eyes. Again, you can participate however you'd like. And just feel your feet on the floor or listen to the sound of my voice or follow the instructions. And we'll explore the house. So at the back of our house is a stairway that leads to the basement. And going down the stairs, we can see as those repressed thoughts that are keeping us from the basement of our psyche, the subconscious, the primal needs. And it's dark on the stairs, but there is a light switch. And we know by turning on that light switch, we can approach the stairs knowing our situation with some understanding. But are we afraid of the dark, or are we afraid to turn on the light? We'll go down the stairs. And in the basement, we find the bathrooms. Isn't that a shameful thing? There's actually quite a bit of Zen writing on the importance of the bathroom, and that it is not divided from our activity. It's not hidden. And the bathroom is a place of release. We can release the burdens we've been carrying, release that fear deep in the basement. It's a place of purification, cleansing, and renewal. And also in the basement, on the other side of our floor, there's the library. And in the library, we hold the collected understanding of our world. We hold our own memory and our relation to ideas. The ideas that support us, the knowledge that supports us. So we can come back up those basement stairs. Higher up the basement stairs, letting some of these things come to the surface. And we'll find the kitchen, this warm place of nourishment, of taking care of each other, of being taken care of. You know, our wholehearted engagement isn't only offering our activity, but also offering our openness, giving away to being loved, to being cared for. And also on this main floor, there's the front porch. This room where our personality shows, where the social self is present, where we consider how we want to show ourselves to others. And here, in the main room, the living room, the meditation hall, we show ourselves the way we go about our life. What do we live in? What are our beliefs about ourselves? And in our meditation hall, May we find peace and tranquility, surrender, serenity. Just a place to surrender ourselves to the wall, to the space in between things. From here we have more stairs, dedicating ourselves to that journey, to that higher level. In the middle floor there's the office. This is a place of practicality and status and our accomplishments. And it's quite possible to fear these as well. But in the office, we can determine our goals and our plans and how we have come from one place to another, how we have reached from the basement, the main floor, the second floor. And again, step by step, up our dedicated journey to higher understanding, we reach the attic. This place of our mind, our intelligence, our connection to self. Right now in the attic, there are a group of people in the Intro to Zazen class. And many for the first time are sitting down, seeking silence, seeking deep inquiry. It's experiencing and expressing that first spark of a question. And take a moment to remember, if you can, that moment for you. If you came to Intro to Zazen here, that first session of Intro to Zazen, for the first time you just sat down and sought silence, or read meditation instructions on the internet and tried it. And from that memory of the first rising of inspiration, let that first moment of inspiration just wash down the house. Let it just wash over the house, through the house, all of the stairways, all of the journey, through all of our parts, our accomplishments and our dreams, our serenity. And you have a key to this house. We each have a key to the house. And you can daydream your own key. What does it look like? What does it taste like or feel like? There's a phrase that has come to me over and over again for a few years now, and that is locked inside a key. How do I access something that is locked inside a key? In the space between one side of the key and the other. And let's come back to the room. Come back to this room of serenity and surrender. Noticing that this room is also interstitial space, the space between the ceiling and the floor. The space between the walls. Everything evens out. There's no more importance between the wall and the room. There's no more importance between the room, the space in the room, and outer space, and inner space between ourselves. It all just evens out. And we call it nothingness, but we could also say everythingness. It's just all even. But everythingness is can get kind of overwhelming. Like if I deal with everythingness, then that feels like all things just all over. Whereas I can surrender to nothingness. Surrender my importance. Give way to the breath and the space. And give that one look. Just the even space of everything. There's nothing to do. Give way to the space of your breath, meeting the space of the room. The lengthening of the spine and the space between every vertebrae. In meditation practice, often, eventually, 2 minutes, 2 days, if you've had a long retreat, eventually that directed attention will fatigue. Like that deal of being with the light switch for 3 hours, 3 days. The directed attention will fatigue. And the fantastical thinking is strong. So we've eliminated a lot of stimuli. And our mind can wander and space out. But eventually we will exhaust fantastical thinking. Start to get reruns, start to get more bored of that than of looking at the wall. So when we've exhausted fantastical thinking and fatigued the direct attention, then we can surrender to non-thinking, to just letting everything be even, without a focal point of attention, without a distraction from attention, without that sharp, discriminative thinking, and without a mystical wish thinking for enlightenment. Then all is even. All is everything. All is nothing. And we can drop into that space, that spaciousness of mind, of house, and let go of the distinctions, the walls between things. We're going to transition into Q&A, but in doing that, I have another request of instructions, and that is take a moment to your own mind and consider what question you have for yourself regarding this material of ways of thinking, or your situation. What do you want to turn the light onto so you can explore down the deep stairs and all the way up to the attic? What is your key? Also, I suggest that we think of questions we might have for others. Things that you might talk about during tea. Things that you'd like to engage people in conversation about. And then also, before we open up to the room, to each other here, do take a second for yourself to think about your questions, your comments, your experience or relationship to thinking. Just a moment to consider before we speak. Thank you very much for playing mind games with me. And let's see, are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Mm-hmm. You had us kind of pick a spot and investigate it intensely. Was the intention, or is the insight that can be taken from that experience how we relate to that object through our past experiences? Like, I have a tendency to, if I look at this spot, like this corner or whatever, the shadows will bring up a memory or a mood or a flavor of just a very vague past experiences. So it's hard to differentiate between experiencing that object I'm looking at or replaying memories.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. I think that's all in there, whether we analyze it or not, bring our attention to all of that or not. You might also try, as you're going along through your day with your coworkers and all, like this, so that it really narrows the view, really makes it specific in all of this, in the world of memory, clear to Andromeda. What is this? What is this? What is that? Our teacher says, what is it? Do you have any other ideas about it?
What I'm getting, I guess, what you're saying is an attempt to look past the memories and then focus the attention on the bare experience. Eventually, the past experiences will play themselves out, maybe.
That sounds interesting. Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm getting from what you're saying, by refocusing.
Yeah. Thank you. Is there anything on the tip of anyone's tongue? Yes.
Maybe feel it seems a little far out, but I've been really fascinated with you about dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is awesome to me that there is this substance that no one can see that must exist all around us.
Mm-hmm.
Not just out way out in the universe, but all around us, that creates a framework for all of us to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes absolute sense in one respect, but it's from an observational, typical cognitive point of view, it is mind blowing.
Yeah.
And yet, like I said, both are true for me. So why don't you talk about interstitial space? I thought about that framework.
Yeah, and I did think about dark matter as well. Would you just, for the room, to give a really basic definition of this complicated thing? I mean, but you know what I mean? Well, or I can try, but if you...
I can do a basic thing. Basically, that astronomers have calculated that based on the observable mass in the universe, that things would not hang together the way they do unless there was some other substance that was gravitationally attracting everything. So it's the difference between what's observed and the laws of motion that occur all around us that obey certain laws but can't obey those laws unless there's this other substance called dark matter to attract them. And they've actually created maps now of it by observing the effect of the gravitational influence of dark matter on other celestial objects. And so they've actually been able to chart it, use something called gravitational lensing, which you can look at. it's easy to think about, well, that's something out there, but it does occur to me that it has to be here as well, and it's this substance that has almost no attraction, no effect on anything around you except that it's there. But in some respects, it seems to me that it must inform all of the space between.
Right. And it's also, the term interstitial space has since been applied to biology. You'll hear interstitial fluid between the cells. Interstitial art that's concerned with process more than concept or production, but just the process of the art. I believe in computer technology, the base framework that isn't the active part of the programming. Those are good interstitial space. I think we'll move on to announcements. But please, I'm enjoying this. Continue the conversation with me or each other and people you meet on the street. Thanks.